GolfJ.com.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Golf J podcast on GolfJ.com. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett DeConi here inside the Finger Lakes 1.TV studios in Seneca Falls, New York on Monday, May 23rd, 2016. And tonight we're going to be talking about El Hombre, Sergio Garcia. And remember, you call these nicknames El Hombre.
He's had a bunch of nicknames, hasn't he, over the years?
Yeah, El Hombre is one of my favorites. That's a good one. Doesn't get used much anymore. But
the man.
His first PGA Tour victory since 2012 at the Byron Nelson, just his second since 2008, which
is crazy.
Yeah, decade.
And he's, well, you know, he contended in a few of those majors, too. He just missed that one, the PGA, where he missed the Patty Harrington. It's probably the most recent one, right?
That was like 2006 was British
that
Open,
ago?
I think.
Yeah, well, that too, but remember, he was in the, Patty won those two majors, and I think Sergio was right there in both of them that year. Hmm. Sergio missed the putt on 18 at the British that year, and then I think it was either that year or the next year where he was close again. But it just seems like he would have had a few more wins since 2008. My goodness.
Well, we'll talk about Sergio's win. We'll talk about Jordan Spieth's struggles. They continue as he posted a 4-over round of 74 on Sunday. How hard is it to win on the PGA Tour? Just ask Charles Howell III. Rory wins the Irish Open. We'll give you our picks for the Colonial, GolfJ.com trivia, and much, much more. So, yeah, Sergio kind of – I got Brooks Koepka in my fantasy league, yeah. And old Sergio kind of spoiled my day, but Koepka spoiled it himself. Saying, man.
Koepka had a few he missed opportunities with some water balls.
He had a three-stroke lead on the back nine.
Yeah. The young guys are, you know, they win some, but then there's these times where they got things going on in their head, I think, and they get a little sideways with what they're doing and feel the pressure of it. You know, Koepka's a solid player, but I don't know if he's really ready to take that next step yet. We keep hoping for it, and I think it's going to happen. But I would have thought after how he played last year that he would have won already.
Yeah.
He's kind of taking a step backwards this year. And to see him on that leaderboard, I thought he was going to finish it out. But, you know, credit to Sergio as well for making things happen, even with him hitting a couple in the water on the back nine.
Yeah, Koepka, I mean, we're really jumping ahead here talking about Koepka before talking about the winner. But he had a three-shot lead on the back nine. That's tough to bounce back from. 19th player in the world, and this was kind of getting a little bit of a breakthrough win for him. He needs to start winning, and man, it was tough. But Sergio, despite hitting two balls in the water on the back nine, played the final nine at TPC Four Seasons at even par 35, just enough to get into the playoff with Koepka, who didn't even birdie the 16th hole. That last par five was all set up for him.
One birdie coming in, he would have got it done.
Garcia captures the AT&T Byron Nelson, earns his ninth PGA Tour title, equaling Seve for most wins on tour by a Spanish-born player. And that, to me, is the big thing for Sergio to tie the best golfer in Spain, Spanish history.
And what you think of what Sergio's done is he's done quite a bit in his career. He's done a lot. But he gets the underachiever tag for a lot of it because of the fact that he hasn't won any majors. He's done great in the Ryder Cup, but to be on the same level as Seve and, you know, be ahead of Jose Marie, you know, who's won two Masters and won a number of times, it's hard to believe that that he was actually up on that same level, just because we haven't talked about him so much in so long, and he really, like you said, he's in many people's minds underachieved.
So the amazing thing about Sergio and his underachievement is just how he went from being a can't miss to having us have this conversation right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 60 starts without a tour victory.
Right.
For a player, you know, one of the top players in the world. And his previous win was 2012 at the Wyndham.
Yep.
2012.
And just – You just think that with him, he gets a lot of it's a lot of stuff in his head. He just gets rattled easily, it seems like. I just don't know as far as he's two different players. When he's in the Ryder Cup, he's like unbeatable.
Yeah. And it is a Ryder Cup year, and he did just get a win.
But when he's not, and when he's coming down, there's just things that really bother him that he'll either do or say on the course and in press conferences. Just a lot, you know, not taking, credit himself for missed putts, the miss that he had at 18 at Troon way back when. You know, he kind of blame that on the gods, so to speak. You know, he really didn't, own up to that. So he's a unique person, unique character on the tour that it's hard to figure out, really.
And in that stretch, too, he's had 15 runner-ups, 11 third place. So he's been in position to win and just hasn't closed. And, you know, to be honest with you, he closed. He had an easy – this was an easy final round close to win, given the fact that he took the pressure off himself probably a little bit once he hit in the water. Mm-hmm. Probably didn't think, he wasn't going to win, but then he keeps coming back. And then Koepka with a three-shot, like, Koepka's up three. Sergio dumps it in the water, and, how can Sergio think he's got a chance at that point? So Koepka, he backed into Koepka, and then all credit to Sergio, I was going to say in the playoffs, but Sergio Koepka striped it down the middle, but Koepka dumped it in the water.
Yeah. So all he had to do was make par, and he's golden. And what he did, what he had to do. But just over the years, think of the times where he's been right there, starting with the 99 PGA at Medina with Tiger, the battle there, and then the U.S. Open at Bethpage with Tiger in the final round, and he had that little waggle problem, and all the fans were heckling him. You know, he's had issues with Tiger at the TPC. He's, spitting a cup at a tournament. I mean, the guy's been all over the map with his emotions and, the way he's perceived.
His antics.
Yeah, just – and so, I've always, liked him and respected his game, but he just kind of keeps getting in his own way until yesterday he kind of figured it out again. But he almost he made the par and he made the, what he had to do, but – he kind of, Koepka almost, I don't want to say he gave it to him, but Koepka, it was definitely his to win, and he didn't get it done.
And the amazing thing to me about Koepka is opposed to Garcia is how poorly Koepka, hit the ball, and he was still had a three-shot lead in the back nine. I mean, look at these stats here. Koepka hit 18 of 36 greens in regulation for the weekend, and his 44 of 72 total for the week ranks tied for 60th among players that made the cut. Okay, and here was a guy with a three-shot lead on the last nine. Garcia, on the other hand, hit 28 of 38 greens, hit 57 of 72 for the week, and ranked tied fourth in the field. It's just hard to believe that after 72 holes, those two players were all square.
No doubt.
So it's a credit to how really good a golfer Koepka is. Around the greens and touch, and I really liked his demeanor. You can't tell if he did something good or bad.
Sure.
I mean, he's really just the same. Even as he was giving away this lead, he just kind of went about things the same way.
Keeps an even temperament, and that'll serve him well in the long run. But it just goes to show you there's multiple ways to get the job done on the golf course. And, you can grind out. You can be playing as bad as you can possibly think you're playing, but still be grinding it out, making putts and keeping it close to the hole and can have success and do what you need to do. And it almost paid off for him.
And another guy who was doing that, too, was Jordan Spieth, which we'll talk about in a second. I just want to quickly note what was in Sergio's bag. Just like last week's winner, Jason Day, all tailor-made for Sergio. So the company that went up for sale, since they went up for sale, they've got two
for two.
Pretty good.
I think maybe they planned that.
Sergio's got a 9.5 degree TaylorMade M2 driver. He carries two wedges, 52 and 58 degrees, and his putter is a TaylorMade Monte Carlo prototype, and he plays a TaylorMade Tour Preferred X, and his irons TaylorMade PSI Tour 3 through pitching wedge, so he carries a 3-iron.
Yeah, he's dialed in.
No hybrids, 3-wood and a 5-wood.
Yeah, he's a more traditional guy.
So now on to the trials and tribulations of Jordan Spieth. To have it so bad as poor Jordan Spieth to be in contention in a tournament and just shooting, Jordan Spieth's going to be just fine. But after entering the final round on Sunday in second place, Spieth signed for a 4 over 74 free falling down the leaderboard all the way to tied for 18th.
18th place.
All only right. Two players in Sunday's 74-man field posted worse scores. So somehow Spieth had done just the opposite of what he did the day before when he still struggled to hit it but was able to card a good score. It kind of fell apart, and it was his best result at the TPC Four Seasons, his so-called home course, since a tie for 16th in his amateur debut here as a 16-year-old. So,
well,
he continues to struggle in the fact that he's not closing these tournaments he's right. getting in position right. to yeah. since that Masters free fall.
He was saying he's kind of battling a two-way swing right now, and it's you can tell it's getting in his head. And to be able to actually be minus 14 and in the lead after three, or part chance to have the win, his putter left him on Sunday. Where that's where I think he was making his putts for the first 3 days and was really kind of making up for, like we say, he was grinding and making up for his lack of confidence with his irons and his hitting his shots. So I think that he really, really went south when he wasn't making his putts yesterday.
Well, just like Koepka, you can only hit the ball so poorly and save yourself
right.
before
you're gonna,
trouble hits.
Yeah, you're going to run out of options, and sometimes those putts aren't going to fall.
Right.
And, you know, as good a putter as he is, he's going to have his bad days. And I think he's really, really struggling mentally. You know, since that Masters, that really,
yeah.
he can say it, or, you know, I don't know if people can say what they want, but it's definitely affected him.
Well, if you watch the telecast, all his drives are, like, way right. I mean, he was hitting his driver as bad as some of the guys that we play with, you know, on Sunday mornings. It's
got the blocks.
It was hard to believe. And to me, when I watch that happen, I'm just like, what's the difference between these tour players and the top, like, amateur weekend players? Right. Because I've seen guys that hit their driver way better than Jordan hit his that day.
Yeah.
But those guys are really good at playing the game
right.
and scoring around the greens.
Right.
It's just such a big
no doubt.
Advantage.
No doubt.
Yeah. In the approach. But you got to wonder if you're a top amateur, what if I played every day, you know?
Yeah.
And got a coach. But these guys are really good. And then you put yourself out there under the pressure scrutiny of the media and the fans, and all of a sudden the guy who hits a great driver every weekend with us.
Pulling it dead left and overswinging, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it, obviously. So, but, you know, like you said, I think he'll get it right. But I don't know, maybe, you know, Rory won until yesterday. I mean, we'll get on to him in a minute. But, you know, Rory's had the same type of issues, you know, putter issues, driver issues. Maybe this won't be the year we thought it would be for Jordan. Maybe this is a year where he's trying to figure things out. And, you know, maybe the Masters was much like yesterday and this past weekend where he was just hanging on the best he could, and it finally got to him on the 12th hole on Sunday. So, you know, he just doesn't seem, dialed in like he was last year up until probably, you know, well, he won the Tour Championship in the FedEx Cup, so he was dialed in pretty much all year. But he definitely has a different demeanor, different look about him this year than he did last year. The confidence level is not there.
Well, he's got the big – all these guys got the big stretch of the season coming up, and the gap has widened between number one and number two.
Yeah.
And actually, number two might fall to number three, because we're going to talk about soon here McIlroy's win at the Irish Open. But one last note on this weekend's tournament. Charles Howell III posted a tie for fourth finish. He probably didn't even know, you know.
Yeah. Always paying attention to that.
Birdied the 72nd hole, Howell's fifth top 10 finish of the season, 79th on the tour, 79 top 10 finishes for Charles Howell III. He's notched 43 top 10 finishes since his last victory at the 2007 Nissan Open. So here's a guy who's been in contention 43 times
right.
since he last won in 2007. You know, how hard is it to win?
Yeah.
On the PGA Tour,
and to do it regularly, like some of these guys have been doing the last 2-3 years, is amazing. I mean, all those guys, you know, till Charlie Hoffman won recently. How good has he played time and time again and not gotten a win? So for Charles Howell to be grinding like he does, it's got to be a little bit frustrating. But this, you know, at the same time, I think they all have an understanding of what they're doing a lot more than we all even do. And where he, you know, he's just going to keep grinding. And it's a good job to have when you're grinding it out like that on the tour.
Yeah, and all the more heartbreaking for Koepka to know he had a win and gave it away.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, one guy who got a monkey off his back this weekend was Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy eagled the final hole, as you've probably seen by now, with a, probably one of the shots of the year, certainly on the European Tour.
That was a sweet shot.
So he eagled the final hole to clinch his first victory of the season on the European Tour at the Irish Open. It's his home tournament where he's struggled over the years. Yeah. World-ranked McIlroy donates his prize money to his Rory Foundation children's charity, and he failed to make the cut at the Irish Open since 2012. That's like, crazy. Failed to make the cut, and so he's not cashing a check for these guys. His previous best was 7th place in 2008, so finally they get a big check for his foundation.
You could see the stress in his face, too, coming down the fairway, and just a relief knowing that he finally actually won the tournament he's supposed to donate all the money to. Yeah. Missing the cut at your home tournament when you're supposed to be, you know, hopefully cutting a check for $1 million-plus. It's a little disappointing, so I'm sure he was pretty relieved and, you know, stepped up like a top three player in the world and hit the shot he needed to hit to win that tournament.
So, to me, and you can argue with that field versus a PGA Tour field, but the field included Danny Willett and Russell Knox, and, you know, and obviously it's
good field.
Some great golfers.
Yeah, the best of the PGA, Euro PGA, for sure.
But to me, it shows that the pressure of it being the one, his home tournament, the one he wants to win, and he was able to come through, very similar to the things he's going to have to deal with at the majors this summer.
Yep.
So, while a week ago I would have said, you know, geez, he's just not putting well enough.
Right.
You know, he's all of a sudden his odds got a little better
for
the majors, but still didn't putt well.
No, he slipped up a little bit in the middle of that round, too, and made it interesting for a few holes. You know, regained his composure and, like we were talking about, hit an unbelievable shot. Was that a three wood that he hit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
258 yards, I think.
To what, about 3 feet?
Yeah, maybe less.
I'm hitting a 258 yard drive with my driver and off the tee, I'm happy as heck. Imagine hitting a 258-yard three-wood to a small green with water surrounding it, and, you know.
With the tournament on the line, with the one tournament you always wanted to win.
Hit a laser.
So another interesting thing from Rory, a little tidbit, was he hinted that the Zika virus could be a deterrent to him traveling to Rio in 10 weeks. And here's a guy who's been real pro-Olympics and looking forward to it.
Yep.
For a while there, it was just what country he was going to represent. But now he says, as it gets closer, I'm relishing the thought of going down there and competing for gold. This is comments after his victory at the Irish Open. But I have been reading a lot of reports about Zika, and there have been some articles coming out saying it might be worse than they're saying, and I have to monitor that situation. Yeah. So,
I mean, the Olympic organizers are just, this is our worst nightmare, and even worse for golf because it's, you know, new sport to the Olympics again this year. And, you know, they couldn't have any more challenging issues with them, with some of the players dropping out. Now they've got to deal with the Zika virus and so much bad pub around it. I hope that the golf tournament comes off well and we get some good players there to make it interesting.
I can see Rory's girlfriend in his ear, too, about the Zika virus because the symptom, what happens is when you get pregnant when you're affected.
Yeah.
So I can see her saying, look, I don't want you going down there.
Right.
And so who knows in that.
It's crazy. It's a lot to think about with all these athletes.
And I'm not too excited for the Olympics and stuff, you know, and it just seems to be getting less and less.
No doubt.
As far as golf goes, with players dropping out, everyone, it's a lesser field.
Nobody's that excited about the course. You know, you got the players dropping out, not even before any issues with the Zika virus. I mean, these are just some guys based on their schedules are saying, I'm not going and I'm not that interested. So nobody of major relevance went down to test out the course a few months ago when they did that. And so it's really not gotten the traction that they really wanted to have. But I think when they introduced it and said it was going to be back in the sport a few years ago, I think they had in mind that Tiger would be playing and Phil and some of the bigger names at the time. would be there, and it, you know, that's obviously not going to happen. So it's really kind of gotten a black eye, this whole thing, and we haven't even got to it yet. So
yeah, well, we have three majors winners to decide first.
Yeah,
so
yeah. And it's a Ryder Cup year. There's so much going on this year that, I mean, it's probably the worst year you could possibly have the Olympics.
Well, I got a Golf J trivia question for you. If you're paying attention, Rhett may have answered this one off the top. But if you're the first to tweet the answer to at the Golf J, we'll send you a sweet golfj.com. Hey, I think I got one on right now. I do.
Yeah, nice one there. Yeah.
So it's a little easier than normal, but
if you were paying attention.
But I think it's pretty interesting. Question this week. Sergio Garcia, Seve Ballesteros are tied with 9 career PGA Tour wins, most for a Spanish-born player. Who is third on that list? And we'll give you the answer at the end of the show. So, I was playing golf this week, and anybody that listens to this podcast knows that I obsess on the mental side of the game out there. And
you almost have to, though, in golf. We were talking about this before the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel sometimes that I don't.
Thinking about stuff going on off the course.
I get too distracted by other things, and it really affects me when I hit shots that I feel I could have hit better. I know it's because I wasn't as dialed in, and you do a much better job with that.
The question is, you know, what you try, I try to get in the zone, and not the way you think the zone is, because I think the zone's very elusive. That only you're only really in the zone for a very small percentage. Even right. The pros, you know, are probably in the zone for, if they're lucky, 4 or 5 holes out of every 100.
Yep.
You know.
Sure.
So that's kind of an anomaly. So when I think about getting in the zone, I'm just thinking about getting into that spot where I'm golfing. Where I'm golfing, the way I envision myself golfing when I teed off, and that's everything from the way I'm talking, my temperament, the way that I'm actually hitting shots, right, the way I'm dealing with good or bad, whatever happens out there. And it seems like it sounds kind of easy, but I have found in my game, and this why I'm bringing this up this week, is because on my last round I played this week, I am even par after 6, okay? So I'm lucky because I've started. A lot of times I'll go 4 or 5 holes, you know, and be like 4 or 5 over, and then I get into that spot I want to be. But this morning I got off to a pretty good start. I missed a really short putt on 3, but I came back with a birdie on 5 and parred the 4th hole, which is one of the toughest on the course. And so I step off the 6th hole after missing probably a 12-foot birdie putt, even par. And then I step up on 7, hit it in the woods, left, and find it, and had to take an unplayable. Long story short, made a triple. Now, I'm not thinking that I'm not in that zone that I'm in. I'm still that. I've learned to just go up to the 8th tee, and once you hit the shot in the fairway, then you're on your way. Right. And that's what I did. Hit the green regulation. Made par, 9th hole par 5, made par. So that for much of that front nine, I was golfing the way I wanted to.
Right.
And then the 10th hole, I bogey. The 11th hole, I bogey. The 12th hole, I bogey. The 13th hole, I double. The 14th hole, I bogey. And then I par out 15, 16, 17, 18.
Right. So it came back around.
It's just all or nothing.
Yeah.
I guess. And I can't figure out what's different.
Well, it's amazing how those guys on tour, especially like you look at Jason Day, how much he dials in, and Jordan, and that's really probably a lot of what separates them from, not from myself per se and my, you know, 12 handicap, but just the fact that they dial in on every shot, every hole. It's like every shot, it's a very mentally taxing to try and do that. And sometimes you can do it for stints, and sometimes you can't. Or even you may think you're dialed in and you're focused, but maybe something's going on that you don't think about. And, you know, I think that is a big deal of why they are so much different players than all of us are.
For me, I think that I looked at what was different between those two. You know, what actually happened, you know, in addition to what I may have been thinking. And and whatnot. But what I found that for whatever reason during that bad stretch, I hit multiple bad shots in a row. Mm-hmm. Like I would hit two bad shots and then maybe a good shot and then maybe a bad putt. Where when things are going good, I hit bad shots, and I missed that short putt on three, and I hit that one really bad shot on seven, and there were some other bad shots in between, but there were very rarely two bad shots in a row. So, you know, good drive, bad second shot, good chip.
Right.
Par, I'm happy.
Sure.
Next hole, bad drive, maybe get away from it, good iron shot, birdie. Right. You know, make the putt for birdie. During that bad stretch, duff a drive, get aggressive with the second shot, and try to hit it over that hill on 10 and then actually save a bogey.
Right.
And then a bad tee shot on 11 compounded by trying to bite off more than I could chew, and I hit the tree in front of me that I was trying to hit it hard under.
Yeah.
Hole 12, easy par 3, missed the green with a tee shot, easy chip shot, hit a bad chip shot, leave myself 7 feet, hit a bad putt. So while I'm thinking in about – you know, what's different, it's just you got to recognize, I think, that things are starting to shift. Geez, you just hit two bad shots in a row. Bear down, pick a shot you know you can hit.
Right.
This is the most important shot of your round because it's going to get you back into the zone. And I don't mean the zone like some unconscious thing where you're lighting it up. I just mean the spot you want to be when you're playing golf.
You get back to thinking the right way about the shots you should hit. Yeah. I find sometimes where if I hit a little left or right and I've got a easy chip out and then get on the green with a easy shorter club, you know, just instead trying to be the hero and hit the much harder shot that you think if I pull this off, I'll get much closer. But then it ultimately costs you two strokes instead of one.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a mental side of it, too, of not really thinking two shots ahead as to where, you know, this could end you up or where what you'll really probably end up doing if you just chip out and hit it from the middle of the fairway, where you're much, much less likely to get in more trouble.
I think when choosing a shot type to play in a certain situation, no matter what it is, it could be a tee shot or it could be greenside shot.
Yeah.
I try to think of what's the worst thing that can happen if I make this choice and what's the best and what's most likely.
Right.
But I always like to think of the worst thing that can happen.
What's the best worst and what's the middle outcome where I'm probably going to end up if I do it the way, you know, a little more.
And I try to, if one of the worst things is out of bounds, two shot penalty, and the other one, the worst thing is, oh, miss the green short right.
Right.
Your decision's pretty much made there.
Right.
I think. And when you're trying, well, like getting back to that zone and trying to break consecutive bad shots, choosing the choice that you're less likely to be a severe penalty.
And it's much easier to continue off the rails than to get back on. And it really takes a lot of positive effort in yourself and in your focus to get you back to that point. So it's definitely, staying within your game and staying in the moment are very, very important.
Yeah, well, sorry to get everybody all zenned out there for a little bit, but
we got them back on the rails now. We'll get them back into it.
It's just been something in my game that I've noticed has been a trait going from over years, is that I will play 8 holes great and 5 holes bad, and then the rest of them great again.
Yeah.
And it's very rarely do I go like a par, bogey, par, bogey, par, bogey. It's more like I'm on or I'm off and then I'm on again. So, and I guess what got me thinking about that too was just watching the way Spieth and Koepka slapped it all over the golf course and we're still, you know, 14. Somehow winning a tournament.
Yeah.
Or in the,
I'd be ecstatic to slap it around the golf course and be plus 6. they're contending for tournaments and they're, you know, not Koepka as much, but, you know, Jordan, you could tell in the last couple of days, he's a mess, and he really needs to get back on the rails, but it just shows you how good a player he is. And he could still do that and be that messed up right now.
He's got another chance to pick up his first win in his home state this weekend at the Colonial, the Dean and DeLuca Invitational at Colonial Country Club, Fort Worth, Texas. $6.7 million purse. And, yeah, first of all, off the top, I just wish they called it the Colonials, brought to you by Dean and DeLuca or something. Yeah, but yeah, the Dean and DeLuca Invitational, this is the longest-running tournament in PGA Tour history. 1936
and
was the first Colonial.
It's crazy. You know, the Colonial is this is where Annika played as a as a pro on the PGA Tour. This is it's just a lot of history with this tournament, and to not have Colonial first ahead of the sponsor is crazy, and especially with the the name Dean and DeLuca.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's a very reputable name, of course, but
can't wait for the Dean and DeLuca.
Yeah, when's that? I'm counting the days down until the Dean and DeLuca. You know, I mean, I know the Masters is coming up, but when's that Dean and DeLuca? So, and the field goes up and down with that tournament, but you know, there is the history there, and it's too bad that they messed it up with that name.
Well,
who you got?
Well, first of all, last week we did a pretty good job. I think Doug and I chose Jordan Spieth. Yeah. You chose Koepka.
Yeah.
So not bad. Of course, nobody got the winner, but
and we'll take we'll take where we were, 18th and second. We were both contending on Sunday, ready to go. We kind of have this figured out a little bit every now and then.
Well, I thought that I thought you had it with Koepka.
I did too. I was like, come on, I'm going to get a W.
So past winners of the, at the Colonial last year, it was Chris Kirk, 2014 Adam Scott, 2013 Boo Weekly, and 2012 Zach Johnson. TV Thursday through Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the Golf Channel. And then Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 2:30 p.m. on the Golf Channel, 3 to 6 on CBS. So it's starting its eighth decade as a PGA Tour venue. And it was also the first U.S. Open held below the Mason-Dixon line. And actually, it was 1946. I inadvertently said 1936. That was when the Colonial course opened.
Right, right.
It was 1946 that the Colonial was first held on the PGA Tour. So last year, Chris Kirk notched his fourth PGA Tour victory, capping a closing 400 par 66 with a 7-foot par save that left him one stroke ahead of Spieth, Brant Snedeker, and Jason Bone. Kirk will try to join Ben Hogan as the only man to record back-to-back wins at the Colonial. Hogan did it twice in 1946 and 47, the first 2 years of the event, and then again in 52-53. So how about a little bit about the field? World number two Jordan Spieth playing the second of back-to-back weeks in his home territory in FedEx Cup number two. Adam Scott, top of lineup, featuring nine of the top 30 in the world rankings. Steve Stricker, the 2009 Colonial champ, returns to for the second straight year. We haven't seen Stricker in a while. And before that, he hasn't played the events since his 2010 title defense. Bryson DeChambeau is back in the field. He doesn't even need to use his exemption for this, one of his seven exemptions for this one. And what else do we got here? Yeah, it won't. This one won't count towards DeChambeau's seven sponsor exemption. So
seven plus one.
Yeah, I guess for whatever reason. What was the reason?
I'm not even sure what it is.
Oh, you know it's what? Because of his performance at the Heritage.
Oh, okay. He gave him another freebie.
Yeah, because he was tied for fourth, he gets to play on one of two Champions Choice invitations.
Oh, okay.
Given out each year to young pros. So, hey, whatever. DeChambeau's there, which I like. I say let him in all the events. Oh, I love
seriously.
This guy.
Yeah, I mean, and it's good for golf, and it'd be good for him to have that many more reps and opportunities to play. Who you got? Who are you liking?
You know, it's hard to believe, but I like Jordan Spieth. I think he really wants to get that win in Texas. He had success there last year. And as much as he is struggling with his swing, he's still in contention. So yeah. I think given a few days here to work out the kinks, he's going to come out and
yeah, I mean,
with his A game back.
It's hard to say, you don't take the guy. But the way he's playing right now, and just the way he's commented about his game, I just don't think he's ready to get another W anytime soon. I'm going to go with Adam Scott. I like the way he's playing. He's number two FedEx guy, and he's won here before 2 years ago. And I just like I like where he's at right now, so I'm going to go with Adam Scott.
Yeah, I'd like it if Scott won. He's another guy on my fantasy team. I was going to try to pull up the field here for us, but that's not working out too well. So
tough to argue with Chris Kirk either, though. He's been playing decent and won it last year. So
trying to do something only Ben Hogan has done.
Yeah, I would imagine he'll be in the mix as well.
So fun tournament to watch.
Absolutely.
Hey, what about Phil Mickelson? I mean, it's kind of surreal what's happened to him.
He's got to cut a big check.
It's kind of surreal what, he's could go to jail on insider trading charges, right. But that's all in the past now. If you haven't heard, have you heard like the details on this thing?
Some of it, yeah.
Basically, Mickelson knew a guy who was a gambler. Mickelson owed him some money, apparently.
Big but gambler.
The gambler knew a guy who was on the board of a company who right. was spinning off another company,
right.
told the gambler, let's call him, can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Billy
Watkins.
Walters,
yeah.
Vegas guy.
Told Walters this tip, and Walters told Mickelson the tip. Next thing you know, Mickelson makes $931,000,
right.
And everybody's loving it. And
everybody's flush.
Yeah.
You use that money to...
Which, if Mickelson, can't you just pay your debt?
Seriously, why would you need an inside tip to make the money? But I guess when you put all that in the bank, you don't like to give it up too easily. But that guy Walters is a big time Vegas sportsbook guy. He's a big. I've read articles about him and how he plays the NFL weekly out there, and he does well. So, but Phil being associated with him, not saying he's right or wrong to have whoever he wants to associate with, but you just think that. Like you said, he probably could have cut the check, and none of this would have been even mattered. And in the scheme of things, with what Phil brings in a year, to get a tip on a $900,000 tip, when he's bringing in $70 million a year, I mean that's nothing like that is chump change. But in the grand scheme, that's really not worth going to jail over.
Well, he got lucky because he will not be prosecuted.
Right.
It was announced earlier today. The no charges will be brought by the SEC. And the reason why is there is a law on the books on the way that these things are prosecuted, in the fact that because Mickelson didn't get the information from the originator of
right.
the information, it
right.
was secondhand.
Yeah.
And that has been in effect to, because supposedly Mickelson didn't know the source, and that Walters
right.
was profiting from
right.
that insider agreement. So,
right.
but that's going to change apparently. And
yeah.
so Mickelson got pretty lucky
here. Because Walters got indicted, and he's definitely, in much, much more hot water than Mickelson. Mickelson's just cutting a check. But now what do you think, ramifications PGA Tour wise? I mean, do you think there'll be anything there? I mean, they're independent contractors. He's really cleared up from legally and from the government of any wrongdoing. Do you think, though, that there's any ramifications that are even allowable on the tour? I mean, or is he just going to get a stern talking to?
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing. There's no, players union.
Right.
Like other sports. And the PGA Tour has the power to, I think, whether
right.
it's right or wrong, or whether Mickelson could appeal it or even take it to
sure.
court, but I don't think he would. I think that if the PGA Tour did levy any type of penalty, Mickelson would probably just accept it.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if they'll do anything. I think they might want to just have this go away.
Right.
And if they were to levy a fine against him or, suspend him, so to speak, for a tournament, that would probably bring more attention to it than if it just goes away, seeing how he's just going to be cutting a check and he's not been indicted for anything.
And if you're the PGA Tour, too, kind of biting the hand that feeds you a little
sure.
bit in the fact that Mickelson's been such a cash cow for
absolutely.
The game of golf,
yeah.
and it's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Mickelson's done quite well.
Yeah, they both, they definitely take care of each other. One hand washes the other there. So probably this is probably going to be pretty quiet after this week. We won't hear much more about it.
And I'm glad. I don't want to see Mickelson miss any of this summer's majors because
no.
he's in court or because he's in jail.
Well, and you just don't want any negative, there's enough negatives going on in sports these days with the NFL and everything else. And you just want to have the ability to watch golf, talk about golf, and be the on-course stuff. And
that's kind of one of the things that makes golf a little different
mm-hmm.
than, they call it a gentleman's game.
Yeah.
And So the crime in itself is kind of a white collar crime.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, and that might be why the PGA Tour does levy something to send a message to other guys that, like, look, if you're going to make headlines like this,
right,
that are detrimental to the image that we're trying to project, then,
right.
So
you wondered too on that, you know, same but different topic, where the, you know, these guys, the games, and Phil being one of the bigger names out there as far as their practice round betting games and things like that, they get talked about that.
That's right.
The tour doesn't really promote those and doesn't really like them talking
about it. But everybody knows they do it.
They do it.
And technically, they're illegal.
Yeah, exactly. But they're talked about so much, and he's right in the middle of that. And he's got a little bit of a gambler or Wild West type of attitude towards it. And, it's almost like, catch me if you can, or he's kind of putting it out there, so to speak. We're associating with these types of guys, and then these games where he doesn't really try to downplay them. There's a lot of talk about all these games that he hosts basically every week on tour with different guys.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't like to see those go away either. That's, gambling's a part of golf.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it is a gentleman's game, gentleman's bets. The guys bet what they can afford. So, yeah. Phil lives to play another day, though. He dodged a bullet there, so to speak.
So, Phil's getting ready maybe for the PGA Tour or Seniors Tour, Champions Tour in a few years, right? Yep,
absolutely.
I wonder if Bernhard Langer's still going to be around winning tournaments when he gets there.
Guy's going to be like 75 winning tournaments.
58 years old. He wins the season's first major on the PGA Tour Champions.
Yep.
Once with 6-stroke victory at the Regent's Tradition. It's the 6th senior major title.
You're right.
For the 58-year-old, but it seems like he's just getting started here, especially when we see him on Sunday on TV at the Masters this year. You know,
final round.
He's amazing. 58.
Well, he's in such great shape. He's a lot like Gary Player in as far as his fitness levels go, and he just seems to win 3 to 5 tournaments on the senior tour every year. I mean, the guy's just solid. Even with the change to his putter and the rules there, he still has the long putter, but
just
he doesn't anchor it. But he's that really hasn't affected him whatsoever. He's made the adjustment and keeps rolling.
Do you think that if you're the European Ryder Cup captain this year, that you might consider
take a shot at him? Wow,
think about that.
I mean, I wouldn't think about it normally, but the way he played at the Masters, same tees as the tour guys.
Yeah.
I mean. Not losing much distance wise, and the formats are so much different. Where that driving the ball long ways isn't necessarily always playing a part at the mat or at the Ryder Cup with the team play. He might be a guy that is definitely worth a look. Depending on
only that. Bring him out there once a day. Never make him play 36.
Right. Exactly.
But, which he probably would be fine if he had to. But
yeah,
the fact is that at 58 years old, he's dominating the senior tour. And the senior tour has some great players on it. And traditionally what we've seen on the senior tour is that you go on there, you win your tournaments in the first 3 to 4 years,
right.
And then you kind of fade away.
Yep. Yeah, but he's not ready to do any of that. When Watson almost won the British at 59, that was more of a one-off. This guy's, just steady, great shape. He's a great putter. And I would definitely look at him based on experience wise. If there's guys that are on the fringe, those last couple spots, and they don't have any experience, so to speak, and he's going to pick, the captain's got a choice. Darren Clark's got a choice of who he's going. I'd go with Langer, 10 out of 10 times in that situation if he's feeling good. You got to gauge that from him when you talk to him after the PGA and see where he's at with it. But
what other majors is Bernhard Langer going to play in? Will he play in the U.S. Open? Did he earn an automatic bid because of how he did in the Masters?
Yeah, I don't know what the waivers are for that, but you got to think he'll be in, at least one more, maybe the British. I wonder if he'll be exempt for that.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah,
but.
So. He'll get some more major work in the next couple of months and would be a prime candidate for a Ryder Cup spot.
Well, the other thing is...
could do a lot worse.
Yeah. The other thing with this is, senior tour majors, come on. I mean, the tradition, it might be a major on their tour just the same way that the Evian Masters or whatever it is on the LPGA. But these, it's just not a major. No. You know what's the U.S. Senior Open's a major.
Yeah. British.
The British Senior Open is a major. And
the PGA. There's really three.
Yeah, the senior PGA. Yeah,
those are tough. You
manufacture some of these, and I think the senior tour has five majors, and the LPGA has five as well.
Right.
Come on, guys.
And tennis, golf, you know, majors are four.
The LPGA tournament too, our tour, the U.S. Women's Open. That's it for me.
Yeah.
The U.S. Women's British Open is.
British is not as strong as a field as you would think it would be with it being, you know, the National Open. But, yeah, there's really two. You know, the Nabisco is kind of is a pretty big one for them. But
yeah, but, I mean, it is. It's their major. Yeah. But it's, to me, it's, like it's not masters, a major.
It's not.
Like, I can't wait to see who wins the Nabisco.
Right. And they always, they seem like, I don't know if they move it around or not, but it just seems like it comes up and you're like, really? It's
that LPGA time. Championship used to be in Rochester at Locust Hill, and they moved that. Even in their backyard, it's one of their majors, but it's not a major.
Right, right. Yeah, their U.S. Open is huge for them, and it's good to watch. But you know, the rest of them, you gotta think that they probably do better by focusing on maybe three and not diluting it by having four and five.
Yeah, or they can do it. My point just being that, you know, the region's tradition. Yeah. First of all, they're putting a sponsor name in front of it, right?
Yeah.
You know, the PGA doesn't have to do that for their majors.
Right.
And maybe I shouldn't be railing on the LPGA and the Champions Tour, but it's
No, but you're right in a sense where it dilutes the product. When you're trying to promote the product that's not as mainstream as the PGA Tour or the European PGA Tour and doesn't have the coverage that those two have, diluting it and making more of them doesn't seem to make sense. It would seem like you would take, you know, it gets watered down and then it doesn't have the interest. It makes it more of a lack of interest other than if you highlighted two or three big tournaments.
Yeah, manufactured the same way that, like, to me, the tradition to the Champions Tour is kind of like the Players for the PGA Tour. So everybody argues as a player is the fifth major or not, but, you know, it's just not. It's not. Just not. You know what the majors are. You just know, you know.
Yeah.
So you know the U.S. Open is a major. You know the Masters is a major. You just know.
I mean, the Players gets a lot of attention, and it's a great tournament. It's got probably, you know, one of the best fields, but it's just not a major. There's the four, and that always will be. But, you know, that's you could talk about that for a long time, and probably nothing's going to change. You know, on the LPGA Tour, even I think of the Evian as almost as a bigger tournament sometimes than some of the other ones that are majors. Because
thought it was, right? I said earlier, I was wrong. It's not. It's the Nabisco, the LPGA Championship, the U.S. Women's Open, the British. Is the British even considered an LPGA Tour major?
So, well, it's European LPGA, but it's a major.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, how's that? I mean, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at anybody. It's just like, it's a major. It's not really a major. I didn't even watch any of it on TV.
We got way off. Off task on that one, from Bernhard Langer to Ryder Cup to LPGA majors.
Well, here's a little something.
It's all right, though.
Also a little bit off topic, and that's, you know, who listens to live golf on the radio? And maybe even our listeners might not even know that exists, but the PGA Tour radio, which is available on SiriusXM and also on the PGA Tour app, is, or, you know, through your web browser, PGAtour.com. But the thought of golf on television, well, let me tell you a story about me this weekend. And I've listened to this before at work during first and second rounds and stuff, but I was watching the final round on Sunday, and Koepka pulled three clear, and Spieth was falling apart, and Sergio was hitting the water. And I'm like, I got to mow my lawn.
Exactly. I was going to say, that's when I listen to it.
I got to go mow my lawn. And I normally wouldn't have, but I'm like, this would be great. You know, for the last, it takes me about an hour and a half to mow my lawn. I'll listen to the finish here as my guy in my fantasy team, Koepka, you know, wins me the event. And so off I go mowing the lawn, and I'm listening to the thing. And I knew, you know, from watching the tournament throughout the last 4 days, I knew what the finishing holes were looking like, and I knew what was up ahead. And really, they do a great job, I think, of describing the action to you. So really all I wanted to know was, did Koepka hit his drive on 15 in the fairway? Did he, where's his second shot? Did he make the putt? And it was great.
It's in the car and on the lawnmower, or when you just have some things going on, they do a great job with their coverage of it. And they're very, you know, they explain every detail, and you know, you feel like you're watching it.
He puts the putter behind the ball. it was a nightmare to listen to Koepka, because when I did that, I thought it was just going to be a Koepka victory march, and I was going to listen to him like, And so when he started falling apart, he was tied by the 15th or by the 16th tee, he was tied, but that's a par five that most players are birdieing.
It wasn't a victory march, that's for sure.
He takes the putter back. Oh, he's missed it low. That's all, like, he kept missing it low, according to the announcers.
So who won our trivia? Or what's the answer to our trivia that I gave away, potentially, if you were listening?
Trivia answer was, let's see here.
So it's Seve and Sergio.
Sergio Garcia, Seve Ballesteros are tied with 9 career PGA Tour wins, most for a Spanish-born player. Who was third on the list? And the answer is Jose Maria Olazabal. Six.
It's hard to believe that he didn't have at least 9. You just feel like he...
Shorter career, though, I think. I mean, actually, I'm just assuming that. I didn't look that up, but I think that his overall career was, because he overlapped with Seve for a little bit, but the back end of his career, he kind of faded away.
He had some injuries, and he also played a lot on the European Tour, so he wasn't one of the ones that had and recently has come over and played full-time PGA. He was a big European guy too, so that makes sense.
So your first instinct is Garcia greater in the Spanish lineage of golf than Jose Maria Olazabal, but of Ballesteros' 9 wins, 5 of them were majors.
Yeah.
With Olazabal's 6 wins, 2 of them were majors. Right. Garcia's 9 wins, no majors.
One players, a couple runner-ups.
2 Byron Nelsons.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's got to get the major. I mean,
Olazabal greater than Garcia at this point. And if you're living in Spain and you're like, "Oh, give me your top 3 Spanish golfers," it goes Seve
and Jose Maria.
Even if Garcia wins a major and it surpasses Seve, I think people still say Seve.
Still 5 majors.
Right.
You know, that's when you come down to comparing those type of things, that's what really matters. You know, and that's what most people would say matters. I mean, you know, Sergio could win 20 tournaments, and if they're 20 colonials, you know, and they're none of them are majors, I'm not putting them above Seve. I'm not putting them above Jose. You know,
Right now I got Jose 2.
Yeah.
And Sergio Garcia 3.
Yeah. And he's got to get, the talent that guy has, I can't believe he hasn't won a major yet. I mean, it's just amazing to think that.
A lot of guys with talent out there.
There are, but I mean, you know, he has it. But I just think, you know, with the mental side of it, he's had so many things derail him in the past that, you know, he puts on himself. Or, you know, some are real, some aren't. But he's never been able to, you know, kind of get those mental demons out of his head to really, you know, come through at the end.
Well, he'll have another slate of 3 majors coming right up.
Yep.
In the next 10 weeks.
Yeah.
We're talking about the U.S. Open, which is what we got?
About 3-4 weeks away.
Yeah, we got this week the Colonial, then we got the Memorial, then we got the tournament in Tennessee there, the St. Jude.
Yep.
Which is now the FedEx, right?
Yeah.
And then the U.S. Open.
Right.
And then, what, 1 week, 2 weeks off?
2 weeks.
And where the Greenbrier and John Deere are in there, maybe?
I think the John Deere got moved to later. The Greenbrier is definitely in there.
Quicken Loans at Congressional.
Yeah, it's Quicken Loans and the Greenbrier, and then you're into the British. It's crazy, the
well, actually, schedule. You know, so
Memorial, FedEx.
Here's what's crazy is I got it right here. You got the U.S. Open. Father's Day week, and then you got the Quicken Loans National, and then you have the World Golf Championship Bridgestone.
Right.
In the Barracuda Championships going on at the same time, and then the Greenbrier.
And the Open.
And then the Open, or if you want to stay stateside, you can watch the Barbasol Championship.
So you have basically 3 weeks in between those two, but it's between the British and the PGA where you've got that close. It goes the Open, then the Canadian Open, and then the PGA. So you have two majors in 2 weeks over three weekends. That's where it's going to be crazy.
It's amazing, and to some, the Canadian Open is a minor major.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and that's
it's a national championship,
and a lot of the great, it's a great field. A lot of those guys get on that charter from the British and come right over.
I love the Canadian Open.
It's a great tournament.
And then the Travelers and then the Olympics. So it's a crazy schedule.
Yeah.
That's about to get started. And honestly, Colonial Memorial are a couple great tournaments we got coming
Memorial
down the pipe.
Next week's, I put the Memorial up there with the players. Because Jack gets the field, and I mean,
it's the same course. A lot of this comes to having such a great, unique venue.
Yeah.
Every year right. in and year right. out.
And ask some of the guys that have won the Memorial. They'll put it up there. If they won both, I guarantee you, Tiger feels just as strongly about the Memorial that he does the Players, if not more, because it's Jack's tournament. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mini major in its own right, and a great field, and always fun to watch that tournament.
Well, we've done it. Colonial coming up. And then we really slide into that great session we have of summer major championships. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time. A lot will be decided. It'll be interesting to see what we talk about come August.
Yeah,
because it'll all be over by August. And then we'll focus on the FedEx playoffs.
Right. And in my mind, the one big thing that'll be interesting is that where Jordan ends up and how he gets out of the slump, and then does Rory make the push to get another major? Does he get his putting straightened out? Because he looked pretty good other than a few holes.
Or does Jason Day win all three of them?
Or does Jason Day just crush everybody and just has it all figured out?
Or does Bryson DeChambeau pick up of his first major? So, hey, we'll find out. But thanks for spending some time with us tonight on the GolfJ.com podcast. Connect with us online on Twitter at TheGolfJ, on Instagram at The_GolfJ, search for GolfJ on Facebook. All of our episodes in the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at GolfJ.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. Until then, hit 'em long, not often. GolfJ.com.